Today's daf in the Sechet Menachot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Pei Zayin, which is as good as gold, you may notice. And not only that, it's going to be all about the gold too. So let's remember that daf easily. We start at the Halakha Mishnah at the bottom of Pei Vav Amud Beit. We were talking about where the best places are to get various ingredients. We're talking about the solet and oil. What about the wine that we bring for the nisachim? Me'ayin ayum mevi'in et hayayin. Well, there's kiduchin and there's atulin, and it's not at all clear that these are the correct gersaot, but the names of places that people were not bekiyim in, they are super-duper alpha le'yayin. Shnielem, secondary to that, would be Beit Rima, Ubeit Lavan in the Har, and in the Bika, we have Kvar Asigna. The truth is that you could really bring wine from anywhere, Kol HaRatzot HaYukshirot, but this was the quality, and this is where they always tried to get their wine from, Mikana Yomevi'im. And here too, when it comes to wine, we're careful not to bring wine that's made from grapes that grow in Beit HaZivalim, Vilomi Beit HaShelachim, so we don't want a fertilized field, we don't want a field that requires irrigation, and we don't want vines where there was planting in between those vines, because that would absolutely wreck. Obviously, we're talking about planting that wouldn't be Kalayim, otherwise there's no point in saying not to bring it from there, it would be Aser Bahana. But even so, even if you were mitrachek sufficiently, it still would leach out nutrients from the land, and that would give us lower quality vines. V'imevi, if you brought wine from any of these lower levels, it would still be kasher. Ein mevin helistion. Helistion, of course, is helios. Heliostion wine means wine that was ripened or overripened, meaning over-sugared by the sun. This is actually what is very common. It was very much the standard wine for Kiddush in the States, was that Concord grape wine, which is exactly this idea of helistion. The Concord grape is very sweet. They leave the grape in the sun, and it becomes super sweetened. So you're not supposed to bring that kind of wine lechatchila, but im hevi kasher. Im hevi in yashan divrei Rebbe, we're not supposed to bring older wine. Because remember that the wine in the Beis HaMikdash is also not necessarily the way you would search out the quality wine that you want to drink, but it's a function of bringing the earth's architecture to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, agriculture, I mean, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that means, as we're going to see where he gets it from the Pasuk, from the comparison to the Keves, it has to be wine within its year. Whereas the Chachamim are machshirim. Ein mevirin lo matok. Now, this is wine not that became sweet from the helios, but that were just from grapes that were over-sweeting grapes. And that's not, doesn't produce very strong wine, and it's not a nice enough wine for Nisachim. And it's also, of course, sweet, but there's a difference between that matok. Lo mu'ushan, smoked or cooked, is pasal. Imevi, it's pasal, as opposed to the heliostan, which seems now, we're going to see that there may be different girsa, but it seems now that the heliostan is kosher, and the others are pasal. Imevi min adaliot, vines that are on trellises are not the best wines. The wine that grows from grapes that are rogliot, from the word regel, that they're from vines that are lying down on the ground, those are better quality. When they lie on the ground, they get more nutrients directly from the ground. Umin hakramima avudim, and we also search out for the type of vines that have been treated doubly, so that they were dug constantly instead of only once a year. They were dug more than once a year in order to just get better aeration and looser soil. So that helped the level of the wine as well. when we actually make the wine, we don't put it into very large barrels. Very large barrels allows too much to happen inside the barrel with different cultures, and because of that, we want to prevent it from spoiling. Instead, we put it into chaviot ketanot, and eno mimalei et achavit ad pia. We also don't fill the smaller barrels all the way to the top, because we want space for the aroma. Kedeshi roche recho nodef, and eno mevi mipia. We don't bring the wine from the nesachim by taking it from the top of the barrel, because of the kimichin. Those are like little white, moldy little dots that you see on the top of the wine. And we don't take it mishulea either. We don't take it from the bottom of the barrel, because that will bring up sediment together with it. We don't want to do that.
Ella, you get the leeway.
Ella mevi mishulisha. Oh my gosh. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, keep that brain moving. It should never get tired. And he brings it from the middle third of the barrel, me'emtza'a. So either that means which is from its middle, which would mean the whole middle third, or it means that you bung it at the middle of the middle third. There's a machlokes about how to read this. So how do you actually check while you're taking out the wine? And you want to bring it for the Beis HaMikdash. So the gizbar, or an agent of the gizbar, stands there, and he's got a kana biyada. The kana is what you usually use for measuring the wine. And as we're going to see, we're careful not to speak around wine. If you speak around the wine, then your voice itself can cause the wine to become infected and to start to spoil. So we're careful not to do any talking. And therefore, when the gizbar would sit there holding the kana that is usually used for measurement over here, he's going to use it to indicate that the flow of the wine should be stopped. Because the moment that he detects any gear is like the whitish chalk. Gear obviously means chalk, but it means that it's sediments that start coming out. He bangs on it. Ikish bakane bangs on that barrel for the man to stop letting out any additional wine, so that the wine will be roi for the menachas. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, if there's any, what you said is wrong, because what you said is you want to avoid the kimchin at the top of the barrel, but the truth is, if there's any kimchin in it, it's totally possible. The whole barrel is possible. No mold whatsoever is allowed, and those white spots are generally mold, and that's possible for the nesachim, shenemar, timimim yiyulachem, u'minchatam. Basically, the pasuk goes on, and if you put the two pasukim together, so the first pasuk says, kvasim b'nei shana timimim yiyulachem, and then the next pasuk says, u'minchasam solet belula. So if you read the timimim, then it goes on the minchasam. So that means that there's a din of tamim for the mincha, and that means you can't allow anything of the kimchin. That's referring also, we find the same thing for the nesachim, because it says also tmimim yulahem, and then we have v'nizkehem, which is the same, it's not the same pasuk, but it's the same idea, where it says milvad olat hatamid uminchato ta'asu tmimim yulahem v'nizkehem. So that means that the nizkehem also have to be tmimim. Okay, so let's think about the Mishnah. The Mishnah said you can't bring sweet or boiled or smoked wine, and if you do, it's possible. But you said before that you can't bring the helistion, but if you do bring helistion, it's kosher. Isn't that a contradiction? Says Ravina, no, actually, you could combine the two. It's a mistake. They're both the same, whatever it is. Some say it's about the same that it's kosher, like the helistion. And others say they're both be puzzle, like the latter. Ravashi says, no, there's a big difference between Elistion and between the sweet grapes, because Chulya Deshim Shalomais, sweetness that comes because the sun sweetens it, is not overly, it doesn't strike you as being overly sweet, like processed food, and it doesn't have that sickening, oversweet taste. But huya de pira, if you've got a fruit that is overly sweet, it's like a candy, and that just like it sets your teeth on edge, and that is completely possible. Ein mevi'in yashan divrei Rebbe. According to Rebbe, you don't bring wine from the previous year, whereas the Chachomim say it's absolutely okay. Omar Chizki, my time at a Rebbe, where would Rebbe get such an idea from? Omar Kra, since it says lakeves yoyin, right? So the two words go together, in which case we're comparing the, I mean, obviously it doesn't mean anything like revi'isahin lakeves yoyin. So, but we're darshaning it as if it says, compare the keves to the yayin. And since the keves has to be within its first year, ben shnato, af yayin has to be ben shnato. Now you'll tell me, but if that's the case, Rebbe should agree that the yayin would be possible because a keves, ben shteshanim, is an ayo. And it wouldn't fit the bill of a keves at all. So that should be the din if you're comparing it to the keves. Af yayin ben shteshanim posel. And don't try to tell me it is, because it isn't. The chitei mahochanami, it's not. Because listen to the lashon of the Braita. Yayin ben shteshanim lo yavi, but im hevi kasher. Now, who is the shita that you're not supposed to bring an older wine? That's Rebbe, right? Man shamat b'derma lo yavi. That was only Rebbe shita. And he nonetheless says, if you did bring it, it would be kosher. So why don't we learn it out from the keves that it would actually be possible if that's the marker? So obviously that's not the marker, because if it was really a hekesh to the keves, then it would be possible. You're right, says Rava. The real reason that Rebbe said is because since the pasuk says, al tera yayin ki yit adam, don't be so impressed, as Shlomo Melech says, with the red color of the wine. But meanwhile, that means that wine during the time in which it has its reddish color, most intense red, which is when it's new, then it has this ruby sort of look. And that is not, no older wines have that look. They have like a deeper red and so on. So since it says Yitadam, so apparently it's a mila that the yayin should be in that first stage. We said don't bring it from the trellises, bring it from the ones that are on the rogliot, and then it says make sure that they are avudim. I mean, all kramim are avudim, aren't they? So what this means is doubly avudim. Tana kramim avudim v'amayim bashana. And Rabbi Yosef, he had a little bit of a vineyard. Havile karne de pardesa. And he would dig into it a lot. The Rafik Beitve Rivka, and this, of course, is the Boker of the English slang. I really dig this because this was for the Yayin for the Nesachim. So I really dig into this. That's exactly what Rabbi Yosef did with this piece. And it was so high quality that Avet Chamer the Dari Maya Al Chad Train. He was able to have such strong wine from that he was able to have the double of the standard dilution. I see Naftali's really digging this too. Okay, great. I'm very impressed, I'm telling you. Really, what can I say? Joe Berg showed. It makes us feel it was worth being the vater. Okay, next thing that we have in the Mishnah. We didn't have large barrels because too much room for things to go wrong. What exactly is a small barrel that we used to use? They used to use chaviot, kadiot, ludiot, ubeinoniot. So these are the size of the ludian, which I'm sure Barnea's probably got a few in his machsan, and they're medium size ludiot. And we don't store them too near each other. Actually, we don't want any one barrel influencing what's going on in another barrel. And if there has been any kind of fermentation that Pasteur would not have approved of, we don't want it moving from one barrel to another. So we keep them separate. Ketzad bodeg, then the Mishnah says, the gizbar sits there, and the minute that you see any kind of whitish stuff coming out, the gear is coming out, he smacks with his measuring stick on the barrel to indicate to stop the flow. So Gizbori Kish Bekana, but can't he just say, shut it off? This proves Rabbi Yochanan's point. Yom Rabbi Yochanan, the same way that we say that when you are preparing the besamim, so it says over there, when they were grinding the besamim for the Beis HaMikdash, they would say, Hatev Hadek, Hadek Hatev, because that was Hakol Yafel Besamim, that human voice actually is good for the besamim and enables it to be even fuller with its smell. But when it comes to yayin, it's just as bad to say something around yayin, and because of that, nobody would say a word, and they communicated by smacking the stick. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, no, no, no. If there's any kind of kimchina at all, the whole thing is possible. So by Rabbi Yochanan, what would be, now this is the Shita changes this, the boy Rava, because this is the same question that Rava raised before. This is the sixth time that we're actually getting into the same issue. We talked about the Ritvaz and how he understands the interrelationship of these different questions that are all in the same general direction. Is there a Chiyav Malkus for making something that is not a behema, but is inappropriate for whatever it's meant to be used, whether you're talking about the oil, or you're talking about the wine, or you're talking about the solet? We've asked all of these questions here. The same question is being asked again by Rava. If you did make it Kodesh, would that be the same Isser of Lo Takriv? Do we say, kivan de pasul, it's the equivalent of a balmum, and it's actually chayv malkas? O dilma ein ba'almum, ela bivehema. And once again, even this question is tikkun. Tana rabbana. Other things that we haven't learned in the Mishnah, the Brite explains that the best elim were brought from Moab. The best kfasim were brought from Hebron. The best agalim are brought from the Sharon. Best birds come from Har HaMelech, and Rabbi Yehuda Omer, if you're talking about kvasim, you're supposed to be bringing really fat kvasim that are the same width as their height, the gavan kirochabon. Well, my Rava Bar of Shila, where does that come from, that idea? My time in the Rabbi Yehuda, tichtiv yir emiknecha, bayomahu kar nirchav. So Yeshayo is talking about the beautiful korbanos that could be yours from your behemoths, and your mikneh will be so successful that it will have that very broad nirchav, a broad car. So that's what you should bring to the Beis HaMikdash. It also says, oh, this is from Rava Bar of Shila, k'tiv al chomoteich Yerushalayim hifkati shomrim, kol hayom v'chol halayla tamid lo yecheshu amazkirin et Hashem al domi lachem. So this is it's a very popular song now. People sing very much because they're all waiting for the kiyum of what it is that these shomrim are saying based on this Gemara. Because the Gemara asks, what do those shomrim of Yerushalayim actually say? Ochi yomar Rava Bar of Shila, Ata terachem, ata takum terachem tzion. Reb Nachum by Yitzchak says, Bone Yerushalayim Hashem. But, I mean, that's now that the Beis HaMikdash is Chorov. But originally, there were always Shomrim, it says. So, what did they used to say initially? So, mi korah mayavi yami, Omar Rava Barav Shiva, ki bochar Hashem b'tzion, iva l'moshavlo. Hadra alach kol korbanot atzibur. Q, Q. There we go. Thank you, Sir Richard. Okay, so now we move on to talking about the Kalim, and we've actually mentioned this a number of times in other contexts, but here is the Mishnah, actually the two Mishnayos that are going to be discussing the Midot HaYavesh and the Midot HaLach that were in the Beit HaMikdash. So there were two Midot Yavesh. There was an Isaron. The Gemara is going to explain what each one was used for and what the basis is of the Machlokas in the Mishnah. Sorry. So there were two midot of yavesh, that's all. Measuring containers, that were used for the various korbanos of dry measure. And that was an isaron and a chatzi isaron. Rabbi Meir says, no, there were actually three. There were two different types of isaronot. There was one isaron, and there was another isaron, and then there was a chatzi isaron. So what is an isaron for? Well, obviously, every mincha, standard mincha, was an isaron. Shebo hayamodet lekol hamenachot, that was the amount of solet that would be used in the various menachot. And lo hayamodet lo b'shlosha lepar. Now, it's true that if you're bringing these as the nesachim, the mincha of the nesachim was shlosha esronim lepar, shnei esronim la'ayil, v'isaron la'keves, but you did not use a three isaron dry measure or a two isaron dry measure for a par or an ayil, respectively. Ela modedan esronot. You would utilize the separate smaller isronot, and you would measure always incrementally instead of all at one time. And the truth is we'll see, if even if you're bringing a very large mincha, remember, you're allowed to bring up to 60 esronot in one mincha because that could be mixed, and you would even do that in increments. You'd have to be modate separate esronot. And what about the chatzi isaron? What was that for? Well, the chatzi isaron ayam eshamesh, that was used for the chavite kohen gadol, remember? Mechza b'boker, mechza ben arbay. So the chavitim were different because you had to divide it in half and bring it half in the morning and half ben arbay. Now, this is mashma that it was brought by halves, but remember, we learned before you did not bring it by halves, and I was going to ask that as a kasha on the Mishnah. Tanya, Haya Rabbi Meir Omer, Ma Talmud Lomar, Isaron, Isaron, Lakeves Echad. What does he repeat? Isaron twice. And he keeps repeating that. I mean, that's we see that the whole time, all the Minchas Nesachim, Isaron, Isaron, Lakeves, and so on. So why does it repeat Isaron, Isaron? That must teach that there were Shtei Esronot in Migdash. And what was the difference between these two Esronot? One of them was Gadush, and one of them was Machuk. So one measured an isaron when it was completely flat on top, machuk. That means it's been wiped clean so that there's nothing sticking out above the kli. And one of them measured an isaron when it was gadush. And we'll see what the idea over here was for and why we had this thing. So the one that was gadush was made to be mekadesh, the solet that was up on top above the rim of the kli. And that would be the isaron. And what was this used for? Well, the gadush, shebo haya modeit lekol haminachot. You use the gadush because it's so much nicer to look like you're bringing like a big overflowing container. So that was the standard, would be to use the overflowing container. The machuk, however, which would hold the same amount, remember, it's not the difference in how much it will hold, it's the difference in how it would hold it. So the machuk was used for the chavite kohen gadol. Why? Because since we had to split it, the chavitim, into two, so because of that, he wanted to make, he understood the Yisroel, the Bitzad HaSfora, was that if we would use a gadush and it was overflowing, then it would probably spill out. And because of that, we dafka made more sense. If the Torah is saying there needed to be a different type of Yisroel, that the one that would be machuk would be used for the chavitim, because that way when we were pouring it out and we needed to split it into two, there would be less of a chance of its being spilled. Fine. So then, that's his diak in the language. No, there was only one isaron. Now, they don't say whether it was machuk or not, but there was only one isaron. Shenemar v'isaron echad lakeves echad. What do you want? So im kemat tamud lomar isaron, isaron. That's a riboy of a different midah. And what was that? That was the chatzi isaron. Oh, that's interesting. So where does Rabbi Meir know that there's a chatzi isaron? Oh, that he learns from the word ve'isaron. So the vav is marbe, some additional measure that is related to the isaron, which is the chetz isaron. And the Rabbanan, why didn't they want to use that vav? Because they don't dorish that vav in that sense to add. Now, I'll leave it to Rabbi Meir. What does he do with the pasuk that says beferish v'isaron echad lakeves echad? That tells me very important halacha. It means lo yimdod shlosha lapar v'lo b'shal shnayim la'ayel. It's saying use always the isaron echad measurement. Do not use larger measurements for one thing, like three for a par or two for an ayel. So lo shlosha lapar v'lo b'shal shnayim la'ayel. And the Rabbanan, how did they know that we shouldn't do that? Where did they learn from the pasuk not to make the special measurements for the par and ayel? They learned that out from the dot. There's a dot right on top of the vav in the word isaron. Titanya, lama nakud vav shebeemtza isaron. Why is the word the vav in the middle of that word isaron? Why does it have a dot on top of it? That is that this is which isaron, the isaron rishon of the yom tov rishon of Sukkos. It has a vav on that word isaron. That's to tell me shalo yimdod lo b'shel shloshel apar v'lo b'shel shnayim la'ayel. Only use an isaron. Do not use multiple isaron containers. And Rabbi Meir is not dorish the nekuda to tell me that. Anyway, continues the mish. Chatzi isaron. What did they do with the chatzi isaron? Sheba yom moded l'chavitei kohen gadol. Now, as we pointed out, that doesn't make any sense because you didn't bring the chavitei kohen gadol initially in two parts. We learned beferish before you have to bring it the whole thing. So what do you mean, shebo hayam moded? Moded? But that means you actually bring that amount when you bring the soet? But that's not true. V'raminu, we had before, mamash in the Mishnah, chavitei kohen gadol lo hayum ba'in chatzain, but rather you would be mevi an isaron shalem v'chotzeyu. So it's ridiculous to say that we actually would bring it that way. So what then does it mean when it says that you measure it? Omer of Sheshes, when it says modeid, it means you measure to split it. So the Kohen Gadol, after he brought his Isaron, then he has to divide it into two. So he divides it into two with the Chatzi Isaron, because even though Lamaisa, it may have already been inside of a Klishores, we're not going to put it afterwards into something that is not a Klishores. That wouldn't be very nice, would it? So because of that, we'll use a Chatzi Isaron as well that has Kedusha. Boimine Rami Barchoma Mibrefchista. Rabbi Meir never said whether the chatzi isaron was gadush or was machuk. Well, wait a minute. I'm bothered by the fact that the Rabbanan never even discussed the whole issue. Why don't you ask what the din is of the Rabbanan? Tiboylochal Rabbanan. I mean, what are you asking only Rabbi Meir? I'll tell you. Of course, obviously, the Rabbanan, I would have to ask about the entire issue. But it's here, it's Rabbi Meir who addresses the difference between the Gadush and the Machuk in the Yisaron. And he didn't say anything about the Chatzi Yisaron. And I'd like to establish what he holds about the Chatzi Yisaron. And as we'll see, ultimately, Rami Bar Chama is going to be able to learn out one from the other because it just simply follows logically. So Rav Chisda said, look, you can bring a raya from Rabbi Meir in the one given case to the other case. And once you know Rabbi Meir to Rabbi Meir, you can also figure out what the din would be according to the Rabbanan since we see Rabbi Meir Shita. Let me explain what I mean here. Since Rabbi Meir said the Isaron has to be machuk in order to make sure that nothing is spilled out. So then that makes sense if that's the case, that the Chatzi Isaron is also machuk, because what you want to do, what are you going to do in terms of changing it? The only reason to do that, why do you say that, according to Rabbi Meir, in the normal mincha you use a gadush? Obviously, because it's nice. There's a sense of ribui, right? So even though it's really the same amount, but it looks like more. So, okay, so there was an inyan to use the gadush. That's what Rabbi Meir held. But there's certainly no inyan to be using a gadush in the chatzi isaron. We already brought it machuk. That will be the point. So obviously, if the Yisoron is Bachuk, then the Chatzi Yisoron is Bachuk. If Rabbi Meir, because of that, wants to use the Bachuk, so it would make sense, according to the Rabbana, that there's only one Yisoron, and we're going to have the same need for that single Yisoron to be handling the same issues that Rabbi Meir is going to have to be handling on the one that was Bachuk. So then they must hold that the Yisoron was Bachuk to prevent spilling on the Chavitim. Chaviti Kohen Gadol. What I want to know is, you're splitting the Chavitim and the Kohen Gadol. How exactly do you divide the actual loaves, right? So you need to make all of those loaves for the Chavitim. You didn't tell me how to make the loaves. You just told me how to split the whole thing in two. Remember, it's 12. We learned out before that we use 12 loaves because we learned it out from Gzera Shava with the Lechem Apanim. And, okay, remember, most of the Shitas held, we bring 6 of those loaves, Baboker, 6 of those loaves, Ben Arbaim. You remember the Rambam has that whole very beautiful, unique Shita, according to the Rambam, that actually you bring 12. And then you take 12 halves, half of each one of the 12s, Baboker, and half Acharei Tzoraim. But the point is, the Ben Arbaim, I should say the correct words. So how exactly do we split that up? Do we split it up like with an actual careful weighing and making sure that they're the same, or we just like approximately? Because remember, we did have the Mishnah before that said if your marba b'chalais or your mamayit b'chalais is not a big deal. So obviously it's not like a major issue over here. So in practical terms, how was it done? Was it done b'yad or b'kli? Says Rav Chista, obviously it's beyond. I mean, what do you think, that we would bring in a tortani into the Beis HaMikdash? We're going to bring like a little scale? We're going to start measuring the challahs? Why not? Says Rami Bar Chama. I don't understand. Is something wrong? Yes. Because when the Torah wants to speak about a tochacha, a kalola, so what does it say over there? It says in the Pasuk Ve'yishivu lach b'chem b'mishkal, that when there's a curse on things, you'll have to sit there, women bringing together their flour, and then they take it out of the oven. They're going to measure it exactly. I mean, who does stuff like that? Only when there's a terrible famine. So since it's a remez to a chlola, lavurachar, it's not their acharetz to bring such a thing into the Beis HaMikdash, is it? I have another question. The Shulchan, is the Shulchan, we know that we put the Lechem on the Shulchan. So obviously that gives the Kedusha at that point as a Klishares to the Lechem. But would you be able to actually be Mekadesh the Kometz? So let's say, here's the question of what this means. According to Tosis, what we're talking over here is a regular kometz. That's because we learned earlier that you could do kmitza inside of the heichal. So if you did kmitza inside of the heichal and you were mekadesh the kometz in on top of the shulchan, would it be mekadesh it as a klisharis, or does it only work as the bucket for the lechem? Do we say that min mekadesh lechem? And remember, the shulchan did not have the normal dinim of klishores because it didn't go all the way up. It was a flat surface, right? All that it had was that remez of the zer. And even that, according to Moshitas, was under. So I understand that it obviously works for the lechem apanim, but maybe that's a special din. So do we say mir mekadesh alechem, it would also be mekamets, Bekadesh the Kometz. So again, this is how Rashi learned, this is how Tosfos learns. Rashi learns that what we're talking about is the Levona, instead of putting it on the Bezichim, what would be if you put the Levona directly on the Shulchan? Okay, different approach, but in any event, the question is, do we learn out from the Kiddush Alechem that it's also going to be Bekadesh the Kometz, either the Kometz of the Levona or the Kometz of Mincha that was put on it? Oh, Dilma the Chazirei Mekadesh. Maybe the point is it was made specifically for the Lechem, and therefore it's Mekadesh the Lechem. But the Lo Chazirei Lo Mekadesh. So Rav Chista said, it can't, no, it cannot be Mekadesh. Ain't no Mekadesh. Really now, says Rami Bar Chama. Didn't Rabbi Yochanan say that actually L'divrei Omer T'vachayim U'mechtza Kofel. Now remember, there was a machlokas of how which ama did we use for the kalim. So if we're talking about the shulchan, might have been six amas, six tvachim wide, or might have been five tvachim wide, depending on which ama we were referring to when we're talking about the kalim. Now we know that the lechem itself was 10 tvachim, and that would mean that you would have to bend it up, because you would have, if the shulchan was five tvachim, so you'd have to bend up the sides to bake the lechem apanim, right? That would mean that you've got a total of the 2.5 on each side going up, which would be the other five. That would give you the 10 tvachim, and only five would fit on the shulchan. If you hold that the arm of the shulchan was shisha tvachim, so then you would only have to bend it up 2 on each side instead of 2.5, right? To get 6 plus 4. Now, so what Rabbi Yochanan said is that you can analyze how tall the shulchan would be able to be mekadesh things by analyzing how high the shulchan is mekadesh the lechem aponim. So if you hold, according to the Mandi Omer, that you have to bend 2.5 tvachim on each side, and you've got the 6 lechem, well, 6 times 2.5 gives you 15 tvachim all the way up from the surface of the shulchan, that obviously it is being mekadesh the lechem, right? So if it can be mekadesh the lechem that high, it means that the shulchan is mekadesh 15 tvachim up. And if you hold, according to Divrei Omer Tvachayim Kofel, that the shulchan was actually 6 tvachim, in which case you only have 2 additional tvachim on each side that you have to bend up to give you 4. 4 plus 6 is the 10 of the lechem. So then the shulchan, you can be sure, will be mekadesh things to a height of 12 tvachim. But anyway, what's the point of this discussion? Only clearly to tell you how high is the shulchan mekadesh other things. I mean, obviously it's mekadesh lechem, whatever it is. So what's the point of saying? I mean, it's just a point of interest. No, Rabbi Yochanan is trying to tell you of what level of height there's actually kedusha that is given by the shulchan, despite the fact that it doesn't have sides and it's not inside of it. So you see very clearly that it is mekadesh. And Rav Chista, you said, it's not mekadesh. Omar Leh said, Rav Chista, now wait a minute, don't jump to conclusions. I still say it's not mekadesh. It's not mekadesh to give it the kedusha necessary to bring it on the Mizbeach. But remember, it takes much less level to make something roy to become posel belina or to become posel biyotze. It is mekadesh for that. It's mekadesh li pasel, but it's not mekadesh li karev. So I know that it's Mitzvah Yontif for so many people here, and I don't want to torture you unless you want to be tortured. If you're feeling particularly masochistic, please raise a thumb and we can go weiter. If you'd prefer to finish up and take less of a chance with getting killed tonight, then we can stop and continue tomorrow. Nah, your thumb is useless, Richie. Nobody's going to attack you on Yisroel Chag. Come on, man. We're talking about these.
We're looking for death in Joburg.
What's that?
We're looking for death in Joburg. Bring it on.
Bring it on. Okay, great. Excellent. Okay, give it to us, Sir Richard. Excellent. Now, let's talk about liquids. Until now, we've been talking about solids, and that was pretty straightforward. Uh-oh, Ari, you're dead? All right. Sheva midot shalacha yubimingdash. And when it came to measurements for the liquid things, there were actually 7 different measurements. There was the hin, and we're going to go through what each one is used for. There was the hin, there was the chatziahin, there was a shlishisahin, there was a revisahin, and then there was the lug, and a chatzilug, and a revisahalug. And Rabbi Elazar Ber Tzedek says, no. There was actually just one large hin, and it had shnatot. It had marks in it that measured all of the measurements. Revi'i Sayin, Shlishi Sayin, and so on, all the way down to the Revi'is Haluga. And it would say, Ad Kama Par, Ad Kama Ayil, Ad Kama Keves. And why would you need to have separate things? Rabbi Shimon says, why would you need a hin, for heaven's sakes? You know the last time that a hin was used? It was used to make the Shemen HaMishnah. Why would we keep a hin around? A hin is not used for anything. So it makes no sense. So lo haya sham hin. V'chima haya hin mishamish. What would you do with a hin? Absolutely nothing. We want to put a little museum marker on it. This was the hin that Moshe, I mean, like, what's the point? So, okay, I'll tell you, though, there was one additional thing that made up for the missing one. There was a mida yitera of 1.5 lug. And the 1.5 lug, that was very useful, because they would use that to measure the chavitim for the Kohen Gadol. Remember, the chavitim Kohen Gadol had a very large amount of oil. And you would need a lug and a mechza in the morning and a lug and a mechza ben arbaim for the chalas of the Kohen Gadol's chavitim. Tana Rabbana. Sheva midot shalach haya b'mikdash. And this is fascinating, because here there's a machlokas about it. Not about what they were, but about whether we start from the smaller and go up, or whether we start from the larger and go down, which is an awfully funny machlokas on the surface. So Tana Rabbana, there was sheva midah shalach b'migdash. And here, it's not like the Mishnah, but rather the Tana Kama says, let's start at the bottom. A revi'is haluga, chatzi haluga, luga, revi'is ahin, a shlishis ahin, a chatzi ahin, and ahin. That's how Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Meir says, no, you got it all wrong. There was a hin and a chatzi hin and a shlishi hin and a revi'is hin and a lug and a chatzi lug and a revi'is lug. Okay. Well, all right. What's the difference? The Gemara, of course, will explain it to us. Rabbi Shimon Omer, there was no hin. What would you do with a hin? Lo haya sham hin v'chima haya hin mishamesh. There's nothing to do with a hin. Now, what can I tell you to put in the place of a hin? Aha! I'll tell you, et mi avitachtav, who takes the place of the hin? That was the midah yitera of a lug and mechza, and that was used for the chavite kohen gadol, because it was split. Remember, the three lugan turned into a lugu mechza in the morning, and a lugu mechza ben arbaim. So the Chachamim said to Rabbi Shimon, what in the world do you need your extra 1.5 lug? I mean, there was a chatzi lug, just in case you never figured it out. Three chatzi lugs are 1.5 lug. So what did you need a separate 1.5 lug if you could have used a simple chatzi lug? Amar Lahem, really now? And according to you, why do we make a chatzi lug? I mean, after all, we have a revi'is halug, in case you haven't figured it out yet, boys. Two revi'is equals a chatzi lug. So you obviously have the same problem I have. Efshe l'sha'er b'revi'it. So clearly, what we need to understand is that ze haklal haya b'migdash. Kol shemishamesh mida zo, eino mishamesh mida acheret. Something that was made for one particular measurement could not be used to measure another one. Otherwise, what's the whole point of this? Okay, now let's go through the different shitas over here. What in the world is the difference between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda if they both agreed to exactly the same kalim, and the only difference is whether they started at the bottom or they started at the top? I'm confused. Last I heard, it really shouldn't matter one way or the other. So what exactly is the point over here? Well, there's a difference. The difference, says Rabbi Yochanan, is birutzei midot ikabinayot. The question is, the part that goes up with surface tension above, remember, we're talking about midot halach over here. So the part of the liquid that is not inside, but it goes over the edge of the rim with surface tension, what is the din of that amount? Is that actually considered to be the Kodesh or not? So if the way that Rabbi Yehuda has it, which is that you start at the bottom and you go up, why do you think he does that? Because what he says is, you actually do start at the bottom and go up, meaning that your smallest measure is then multiplied into the larger measure. So if you want to get a chatzilug, or you want to ultimately get your hin, you're going to be pouring a lot of revieses and then chatzilugs and so on and so forth till you get your large measure. But the thing is, every time you pour, you can pour the additional surface area that was above the rim, and there's not going to be any problem because you've got room in the next higher size for anything that is poured, right? So there'd be no problem in taking a small midah that has got a additional surface tension maintained rim above the rim of the kli. So he obviously holds, because Rabbi Rutze midot nitkadashu. So what does that mean? It means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu the shear of the revius and said, take this revius and with it, calculate out all of the various midas that you're going to need. Well, if you do that, then you pour. And if you pour, you always get a little bit of frothing and so on, but that's okay because you've got this big kli that you're going to end up pouring into. So according to him, the berutze midas are included in the measurement, and the revius was given to Moshe, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu kevayochol said to him, sha'er, this is what you should use, in which case it's enough space to be ma'ayelu berutzin. You're going to be able to keep pouring from one without worrying about its being precise. But if you hold, like Rabbi Meir, that you go from the top down, then you're in trouble. Because if you're going to pour into a smaller kli, you're just going to have an overflow that's going to spill out. Because as you pour, generally speaking, I mean, you're not going to be so careful that you're going to get in your surface tension exactly. You pour, and then it pours over the edge. And therefore, that would be no good. So he must hold, birutze midot, lo nitkadashu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the hin to Moshe and said to use the hin, in which case you cannot have birutze, because the birutze of the hin will just fall all over the place when you try to pour it into the lower kelim. So it's sort of like a logistical issue. Abaya says, oh, come on, that's like being very, very literal, isn't it? I would say the Kulei Alma, I don't think this has anything to do with Birutze Midas. I mean, everybody can hold whatever they want to hold about Birutze Midas. It's not dependent on this. Birutze Midas, you can say whatever you want. Ikalamemba Kenit Kadashu, Ikalamemba Lonit Kadashu. That's not what we're talking about over here. This is a question of how to understand the word Mileim. Shnehem Mileim Solat Pululav Hashem Elamitcha. How many times have we had psukim like that? So that means that there is a hakpada on what Mileim means. That's the issue. Siman Yomer Milamala Lamata. The way that Rabbi Meir said it, he holds Mileim means precisely. And it's got to be that size. Shelo Yachsav, Shelo Yotir. And therefore, you'd be have to use the hin as a very precise measurement. Masha Inkin, if you hold Mimata Lamala, so then the Hakpada on Mileim is, it shouldn't be less than this. But there's nothing wrong with Mileim. It's just telling you, if you put in more, you put in more. That's the not the issue. The issue is make sure that you have this entire measurement. That's all. Omama, Rabbi Shimon says there wasn't a hint. What in the world would you do with a hin anyway? Well, that's a good point, isn't it? Shapir Karmel Rabbi Shimon Rabbanon, what would you do with a hin? And why did Rabbanon say there was a hin? Well, what do you mean? We know there was a very important hin. It was the basis of the Shemen HaMishcha, and that Shemen HaMishcha was like the mokra of all of the Kedusha and the Mishkan. So there was the hin David Moshe l'Shemen HaMishcha. Dichtiv v'Shemen Zayit hin. It says beferish. That's a hin. The Gemara is going to ask, what do we need it for l'dayreis? Whereas Rabbi Shimon says, I understand, I'm not stupid, but we don't need it anymore. So kiven l'dorot lo'avit tzarech, it was made for that time. It was needed only one time in history, l'fi sha'a, and then they were gonis it. Why would they keep it? V'idach, Masha Enkin, Rabbi Yud and Rabbi Meir apparently both agree that once something was used in the Mishkan, kivan dehave, have it. It's definitive. It's not simply a question of logistics. These are the kalim that we needed to make for the Mishkan. Now, you also said something so funny, Rabbi Shimon. You said, and who shall I bring instead of the missing hin? What do you mean, the missing hin? If there wasn't a hin, so then there were six, not seven. What's the problem? Lo sagi lo mayo. What, it's no good if you couldn't find somebody else to throw in? Ah, that's because the same way Ravina said about there need to be gemire, shtei smichot betzibur. We're going to see a little bit later that there was a special halacha l'meisha misinai, that even though there's no smicha done on karbanas hatzibur, we have a halacha l'meisha misinai that there are two. We also know that there were seven midot shalachayu b'migdash, the same way there was the smicha on the paralam davar and on the azazel. We know that there were seven specific midos in the Beis HaMikdash, and because of that, Rabbi Shimon said, so what am I going to bring instead? Now, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Tzadik says, no, there was just a hin, and then there were shnatot. There were marks in the hin. So what happened? I thought we said there's this halacha l'meisha misinai. I mean, didn't he have that Kabbalah that there were sheva midos? Maybe he wasn't mekabel from his Rebbe. Or it could be that he understood sheva midot not as being separate actual measurements, but rather sheva mididot. So you had to have the shnatot in order to provide seven different amounts, but it didn't necessarily have to be separate kelim. Okay, lovely.